Welcome to the Gold Standard here from the 440 Sports Network. Good Saturday morning. The season is over. My name is Braden Gall. That is Emma Lingen and Michael Gallagher. Of course, you can get to Michael at MGSports_ on the Twitter.com machine. And, of course, at Nashville Hockey Now. Emma Lingen, at Emma_Lingen, and at the Hockey News as well as Heavy.com. Good morning, both of you. How are we? How are we doing this Saturday morning? The season's over. It's over. It's done.
Feeling good. Feeling still a little tired, but ask me in a couple days. I'll probably feel better.
Like Andrew Burnett, I plan on sleeping for a week.
Good. Yeah. That's good. That's good. He deserves it. Y'all deserve it. I agree. And special thanks to all of you guys who have been watching these live shows during the playoffs. We may be implementing a little bit more of that moving forward, but want to say thank you to all of you who listen and have watched and have commented and have been a part of this. If you would like to give us a thumbs up on the YouTube page, subscribe. We're going to have more Preds content for you. And of course, if you would please share on the other applications, Twitter.com and that other place, Facebook, that I'm not sure I have visited in 14 years. So, but we do appreciate you guys hanging out and watching. And obviously, we're going to get into a lot of stuff today about the series, about Game 6, and about the series. And I am saying this on the front end, Emma. We have all offseason to talk big picture. I do not want to talk big picture today. Now, if you happen to weave in some big picture takes into your little picture takes, that's fine. But I don't want to hear about the state of the franchise, which is very good. Okay. Very good. I'm doing poly positive right out of the gate here. The state of the franchise is in very good shape. Preds fans should be very excited for the future. We have all offseason to talk about that. I would like to talk about the series and Game 6 today. Is that okay with you guys?
I would just like to point out that I fought the urge to go big picture when I was writing my Game 6 recap for the Hockey News. I had half of something like written out and then I ended up scrapping it or like saving it in another file. I was like, no, Emma, we got it. We got to talk about this game. And so I went, you know, I left the unicorns and rainbows at home and I talked about the two big things, the two biggest advantages that the Preds had in Game 6 that they completely wasted. So you would be proud of me.
I'm back.
I kind of did the same thing. That's why my, instant reaction piece came out so late because I got halfway through and I'm like, wow, this is more like a post-mortem. How do you fix the franchise going forward? And I was like, this is like two or three stories. I want to save this and try to focus on the one big issue that I saw last night. So I think there's a lot of that going around with when a season ends, you have so many thoughts and you just want to get them all out there before you forget them all. But then you're just like, there's more time for that. And people want to know what happened in Game 6 because that's a game that another one that they should have won.
So, and in general, the series as well. Max says, hell of a season, looking forward to next year. Fine, that's great, that is true. And Max, I appreciate that perspective. I think you're probably a healthier person mentally than the rest of us, so good for you. That being said, and I think I saw this on both of your headlines, and I think I saw it in both of your pieces, I saw it all over the Twitter sphere, and this was a series of missed opportunities. Game 6 was sort of a microcosm of the entire series. An extremely entertaining hockey game. Like, just like on a pure objective basis, a very entertaining hockey game. I think the series, objectively, very entertaining games. Other than Game 3, which the Preds actually probably played better than in some of their other games, Game 3 was a dud for a variety of reasons. But Game 1, extremely entertaining and dramatic hockey game. Game 2, for the Preds fans, maybe not a great game, but they won the game, scored 4 goals on the road. Game 4, one of the better games the Preds played all series. Complete collapse, but super dramatic hockey game, if you're an objective observer, right? Game 5, very even. Huge comeback for the Preds in third period. Very entertaining. I think the series was what we expected, and I think Game 6 was a microcosm of that. Two teams where Andrew Burnett closed the talent gap, played extremely well, hard-fought, dramatic, defense, goaltending, and at the end of the day, the team with more talent simply figured out a way to take advantage of their opportunities, where the Nashville Predators failed to take advantage of their opportunities.
Yeah, I think I saw some people on social media and everything saying that it was a boring game and a boring series just because, you know, it was low scoring. And it's like, all right, I guess maybe if you are a casual, very casual fan who only wants to see guys scoring goals, then I guess, yes, it would have been a boring series for you. But I think that maybe it wasn't the highest skill series. Like all the goals were greasy and ugly and dirty and guys were just hitting each other all over the place. I think it wasn't exactly a highly skilled matchup, but it was a slugfest and it was very defensive. And like you said, the team with more talent, I would maybe argue even the team with more depth was the team that was able to get it done, was able to capitalize on those opportunities, because the Preds did go not just in game six, but in the whole series. That I'm not going too big picture here, but let me get to my point. They went head to head with Vancouver. Like they were so close and they were in it. They were in that series. They were in that game. And so, you know, to Max's point earlier, it was a good season. Looking forward to next year because we saw a lot of good things. But, you know, ultimately, yes, you have to have talent. You have to have depth, but you also have to be opportunistic. And the Preds just weren't in that series or that game, and that's what ended up costing them.
Yeah, I agree, but I would also kind of disagree a little bit. I do think it was a highly skilled matchup because it, especially last night in my opinion was the best game of the series, and it almost felt like that was the ultimate chess match between Andrew Burnett and Rick Tocchet, and that was one hell of a game. Yeah, it was 1-0, but you were on the edge of your seat the entire game. You were invested that that something could happen at any moment. The Canucks were driving in the offensive zone and Saros is making save after save and the defense is all over the place. Next thing you know, Nashville's on the other end doing the same thing. And last night, I feel like was the best game of the series. And I wish we had three or four more of last night, because last night was compelling. It was energetic. Bridgestone mm-hmm. Arena was finally back to being a playoff atmosphere. Like last night was everything except for the outcome. Everything is what you wanted for as a Preds fan. And that's what I enjoyed about this series. I would argue this is one of the better series of the first round because it kept you invested. It wasn't like one team was clearly miles better than the other team. It was a very close series. And maybe for other people like me, I highly enjoyed the chess match between Tocchet and Brunette because they gave each other, you know, props throughout the whole time. They're saying the other guy's a great coach. And obviously they both are Jack Adams finalists for a reason. And Brunette impressed me because it was clear he was outgunned against Vancouver and he still found a way to keep it close. And Nashville should have, honestly, they could have won the series. So if you're a Preds fan, there's a lot to be proud of and there's a lot to looking forward to the next couple of years or whatever. There's a lot to build on, but yeah, this one's going to sting. It's going to suck because last night was winnable. Games 3 and 4 were winnable. You had that collapse in the final 3 minutes. I mean, there was a lot that went wrong, but obviously after watching last night, I don't think there's a lot of reasons for Preds fans to be mad. Like that's kind of what you expect to going up against Vancouver because they're one of the elite teams in the NHL and they're really good. They're physical and they're defensive. And that's the kind of team that Nashville struggles with.
Well, and to your point, like at any point during the series, every game, it was anyone's game. It seemed wide open, at least at the start of each game. And, you know, I would argue this series and the Dallas Vegas series have been the most tightly contested and the best series to watch in this first round because of that. It's like two evenly matched teams that really it could be anyone's game. And you know, that's where, like I said, it does come down to being opportunistic, and Nashville just was not opportunistic enough.
I do feel like it was, and I, you know, you guys can correct me if you think I'm getting this wrong here, but I thought the way we looked at the series going into it, which I'm kind of paraphrasing myself, I guess, here, which is I think the Predators absolutely have a chance to win the series because I think they're the two coaches are the stylistics. They're going to match up. It's going to be fast. It's going to be entertaining. It's going to be high quality this, high quality that, and Vancouver's just a tiny bit better. 3 more wins in the regular season, a few more points. Like they weren't a, you know, there wasn't 25 point difference between these two teams or whatever in the regular season and wins. And I think that's kind of what we saw. I think, you know, we mostly expected Vancouver to win. I don't think that was like some crazy prediction or whatever. But I think it did play out the way we expected, which I think is the positive. If you are a Predators fan, to Michael, to your point, I think and to both of your points, like 0-0, if it's good hockey is entertaining to me. Like you can watch a 1-0 pitching duel in baseball, but if it's really elite pitchers doing it, I don't care if it's 1-0. if it's two great NFL defenses keeping a game, you know, 13 to 10 because it's elite defense, that's entertaining to me. It's when it's bad hockey, sloppy, ugly, bad hockey that leads to 0-0 that we go, okay, that wasn't a good game. That's not what happened in game six. And honestly, like, I thought it was a pretty clean game. I thought game five was a clean game. Not a lot of dumb, stupid penalties, not a lot of mistakes, not a lot of like defensive zone turnovers. And there's something special about an elimination game that is 0-0. There's just something special about elimination games where both teams get to midway through the third period and everyone in the building, both teams, both coaches, both players, everyone is puckered up because it is so like anything could happen at any moment. And the goal Vancouver scored, certainly the Preds had, we'll get to all the missed opportunities. And that's going to be cathartic, I assume, for many people because they so many chances in the second and third period to score a goal and could not capitalize on legitimately good scoring chances. And then two players make a spectacular play, and that's the end of the series. And that's just what happens when the other team is just a little bit better than you. And otherwise, we'll get to all the list of missed opportunities here, but I think sticking in the series, but sticking with game six, I think you have to start and end with UC Saros.
Well, I want to point out, too, before we move
absolutely
on
spectacular.
There were 53 scoring chances and 27 of them were high danger. So yeah, it was a 0-0 game, but there was a lot of action and like that game could have easily been 3-4, 4-3 going into the third period. So I mean, there was a lot of action. And to your point, like if it's elite defense going back and forth, then yeah, it was an exciting game, and that's exactly what happened. So I saw a couple people complaining about that too. Like I think we need to break free of this scoreless stigma. Like if it's 0-0, like it can't be an exciting game, because last night was probably one of the most entertaining games of the first round.
Well, again, you can have an ugly 0-0 game where it's bad hockey, penalties, bad goaltending. Yeah. Players can't shoot the puck. They can't pass the puck. It's turnover. Like that's bad hockey. This was not that in my opinion. UC Saros was absolutely spectacular. He was spectacular in game six. He was doing things in the first period and like right away that you could tell this dude is going to be on tonight and he's going to give him a chance to win. And he did. He did everything in his possible power to give him a chance to win. Now he finishes the series with a .900 save percentage and a .202 goals against. If your goaltender in 2024 gives up .202 goals per game in a series, you should win. You should win. And this is ultimately where we get into the missed opportunities. Which is, and I'm going to ask you, Emma, to explain why you think you were right about game six here, because I don't understand, because all of your stuff about game five was correct, but the series ended because of game four. So it's okay to be doom and gloom about the fact that they would be playing in a game seven right now today if they had not choked away game four. If the power play was not 2 for 22... They are, I think, like I saw on Twitter, 8 for 61 is the power play over like two coaches, but 2 for 22. And in game six, it's not just a power play. In game six, Andrew Brunette, in my opinion, put his players into a position to make plays to score goals and win the game. And half the time, they couldn't hit the net against the third string goaltender. They are 0-3 at home.
A rookie third string goaltender.
All you have to do is win one game at home with a 2.02 UC Saros, with a defense that's blocking shots, and you're going to get more power play opportunities than every other team in the NHL. You have to win one of those games and get it to game seven, and they couldn't do it. I think they played a really great series and a great game. I'm not taking away from that, but. Game six to me, missed opportunities, which is a microcosm of the whole series. You've got to put the puck on the net when you are in a high danger chance. It's absurd.
Yeah. I mean, we said this before the playoffs even started, that UC Saros is the kind of goalie who can steal you a game. And let me tell you what, he made at least 4 game stealing saves in the second period alone. There was that one sequence where he made like 2 monster saves back to back. It was the JT Miller shot, and then Suter tried to get the rebound. Oh. And it was, I mean, that when you watch that, when I saw that sequence alone, I'm like, Saros is on his game tonight. Like, they need to win this for him. And like you said, he gave them every single chance. Andrew Brunette even said, it was, you know, I thought it was going to take all night to get one by him. I thought the game was for sure going overtime. I thought that before the second period was even over. I'm like, both these teams are playing like they want it to go to overtime. And I think that it was just, you know, like I said, it's opportunities, missed opportunities, the power play. when Brock Besser high sticks Jeremy Lauzon and gets a 4-minute double minor and you only put two shots on goal, that's a problem. That's a problem. Now, like, again, I almost got nervous. There was the one, was it in the second period or the third period? Brayden, we were talking about this when Mark Jankowski got the coincidental penalty that seemed
the matching minors. Yeah.
The roughing penalty.
It was a bad call. Yeah.
Didn't see a whole lot of roughing from him, but I was like, you know what? Clearly the power play is not an advantage for the Preds in this series. They'd do better at 4-on-4 than they would at 5-on-4. Yep. So it's fine. But I think, you know, to me, that was when I first said, when they didn't do anything, not just didn't score, but like didn't even put the puck on the net on that 4-minute power play. I was like, you're playing like you don't want to win. And
it's demoralizing.
It is. And it just kind of takes the wind out of your sails. And especially, you know, and again, like you touched on this, and it's not to take away from Shelob's, the third string goaltender. He was great.
Played very well.
He played very well. He looked very poised, did not look like a rookie. However, you need to test him more. I mean, they weren't testing him enough. They weren't, you know, there were so many, yeah. You know how many rebound goals the Preds could have scored last night if guys had just followed through on the play? And it just, you know, they weren't testing him enough. And they were doing a lot of skating and a lot of passing, not a lot of shooting. And, you know, if you're going to play like that, then you need to be able to capitalize on the opportunities when they're handed to you, like a 4-minute power play. And they didn't.
Yeah, I mean, the Predators had, 22 power play opportunities in the first round. That's more than any other team, and they scored 2 goals. And they scored on their very first power play with Ryan O'Reilly, and then they went, I don't even know how long, before they got their second power play goal. And it's that, and I wrote about this a little bit, that 4-minute penalty kill for Vancouver, that is what kind of changed the momentum in last night's game. That I feel like that was the turning point, because that was like, it almost felt like that was the aha moment where Vancouver's like, they got nothing. They get 4 minutes with a man advantage and they can't get anything past us. They got nothing. And you could almost feel like the Predators, the wind kind of came out of their sails, because they said the exact same thing, like 4 minutes and we couldn't put anything past them. I think they had 3 shots during that power play. None of them were particularly high quality. None of them were really even like close in the greasy areas, which they were talking about where they wanted to go score. And that was a huge issue. Obviously, like we've said several times, the power play wasn't the reason that they lost, but it was the reason they didn't win, or however we phrase it.
Yeah, no, that's exactly, confused. That's exactly right. They didn't lose the series because of the power play, but we are not playing in game 7 because of the power play.
Yeah. And I want to stir the pot a little bit. I have a solution for the power play. No. You hire Carl Taylor to coach the power play, because he the last 2 of the last 3 years, the Admirals have had the number 1 or the number 2 ranked power play in the AHL. Carl Taylor excels at the power play. Hire the man, because you're going to lose him probably to another NHL team. Hire the man. Let him specifically coach the power play, because I feel like Brunette would be better served if he could focus on everything else instead of trying to coach everything else and try to fix the power play, which everyone keeps harping on. Give Carl Taylor that job.
I don't disagree that it's a wonderful idea. Having met and talked to and known Carl Taylor, I don't think he's leaving the Admiral's job to be an assistant coach, even for the Nashville Predators, but that's just my assumption.
Oh, I disagree.
That's my informed speculation. He wants a head coaching job in the NHL for sure. I don't know if it's a better... I don't know. That's a great question. William says Trotz is going to be very busy this offseason. Question is, what does he do? We got more pods for that, big guy. I hear you, but we're going to do pods. We're going to do all kinds of shows about what we do in the big picture in the offseason, which, again, should be very positive. It should absolutely be very positive. But in the moment, I think it is okay to look at a team that had a chance to not only get to game 7, but to win the series. 0-3 at home, third string goaltender, 2-for-22 on the power play, no depth scoring. And Michael, you just mentioned Ryan O'Reilly scored the first power play goal in game 1, did not score again the rest of the series. Your star, Roman Josi, I love Roman Josi, best player on the team, maybe the best player in franchise history. There were moments where he was kind of missing in the series. I don't think it's his fault, but I'm just pointing this out. Philip Forsberg, excellent. 2 goals, 4 points. Gus Nyquist, 1 goal, 3 assists. When outside of Philip Forsberg, Connor McDavid scored more points in the first game of the playoffs than every player on the team for the Nashville Predators in the entire series. Connor McDavid had 5 assists in the first game of the playoffs. Only Philip Forsberg had more points. Like you can't have games 2 through 6 and get 0 goals from Ryan O'Reilly and 1 from Gus Nyquist and very little from your second and third line as well. Like depth score, like it's all the same kind of stuff, which is a sign of a franchise that is in like adolescent mode, right? This is the adolescent Andrew Brunette Predators. And that is the big picture take that we can focus on in the offseason. But in the short term, this has got to burn because of the missed opportunities. They should be playing in a game 7 because of game 4. And in theory, they could have been playing to win the series last night. And so I don't think that the doom and gloom and that was the biggest collapse and all that stuff from game 4. It's not wrong. That's absolutely correct. It's what cost them the series, in my opinion.
Well, if you're going to bring up McDavid, though, can we all agree that Vancouver is going to absolutely get whooped by the Oilers in the next round?
If they play that way. And I think Edmonton's on a mission. So that's my personal.
Yeah.
I don't. Again, the big Edmonton, picture, you're not beating Edmonton.
To your point, Edmonton is much more. They are just a more talented and skilled team than the Predators are. So if Vancouver was that close and that, you know, like head to head with the Predators there, I mean, to me, I think that they're absolutely, Edmonton's going to destroy them in the second round. But again, I think Mike said this last night that, you know, well, if the Preds had made it to game 7, if they had won and advanced to the next round, what's your prize? Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl. So maybe, the best.
Your prize is a learning experience. That's your prize, which is what this was, honestly.
Demoralized as Saros was in the locker room, you know, he had to breathe a sigh of relief being like, okay, I don't have to stop Connor freaking McDavid and Leon Draisaitl in another. That game, that series would have went 4 games and it would have been brutal every time.
Well, yeah. Don't look at the split stats for McDavid and Draisaitl against the Predators. I think Draisaitl averages like 4 points a game or something absurd like that.
Yeah, it's ridiculous.
So I will say the Stars numbers are the main four, which is you have to have your Stars play well to win any playoff series. Yossi and then the top line, O'Reilly, Forsberg, and Nyquist. They played really good hockey. I don't want to sound like I'm not saying they did not. Every time they got the puck, that shift, they were in the offensive zone in game 6. Like they had so many chances, just couldn't finish it. Same deal with the rest of the team, but they played a great series. So I'm not suggesting that, but they needed a little bit more. I actually give credit to Tocchet and Vancouver for the way they played. I think the whole series was very well played, low scoring, low shots. I think that's what made game 6 more fun, is because we had so many more shots on net from both teams, but the depth scoring is another issue here. And you know, Beauvillier, Novak, Evangelista, Jankowski, Evangelista, and Novak, that's a combined 3 total points in the whole series. Like they were overmatched because of the size. They were overmatched maybe because of experience. Hopefully this is one of those lines that learns a lot from this and grows into something more next year, because those guys are better than 3 total points in the whole series.
Yeah, I also think too, and to your point, like, yeah, Forsberg, Nyquist, Yossi, and O'Reilly, like those are your main guys. I do think they had like a solid series, not taking anything away from what they did, because defensively they were right where they needed to be. But when you look at Forsberg, 1.15 points per game during the regular season, right at 1 point per game in the playoffs. Nyquist, 0.93 points in the regular season, 0.67 during the playoffs. Yossi, 1.04 in the regular season, 0.5 point per game in the playoffs. O'Reilly, 0.84 points during the regular season, 0.33 during the playoffs. Like their scoring output took a hit. And part of it is like they weren't playing the way they were towards the end of the season. And that was one takeaway I saw. And that's part of the reason why I predicted them to go 7 games. And I was like, I could see the Predators winning the series. But when I said that, I was thinking we were getting the 18 game point streak Predators, not the Predators that kind of sat back and were okay with just counterpunching. Cause that's what I saw a lot of. Instead of, when they were during that 18 game point streak, they were the hunters. They went out there and they were aggressive. They took the fight to the other teams and they kind of took a hold of these games. When they were playing against Vancouver, pretty much every single game, it felt like they were sitting back and waiting to see what Vancouver had before they responded. And that's not a great way to try to win a series.
Can I also stir the pot here and just say the sentence that I, you know, probably no one thought we'd ever say? Cole Smith out game six, huge loss for the Predators. Huge loss.
Completely agree.
Now, I don't think
Parson played terribly, but.
No, but I think, and Mike made a really good point, actually, last. Parsonen wasn't a one-for-one replacement for Cole Smith on that identity line, the beef line. First of all, Parsonen's not American, so brand identity would not have stayed intact. But I True. Think, to Mike's point, obviously that's what's most important here.
That's what matters.
To Mike's point, I think, you know, Andrew Brunette relies so much on that line, the beef line, McCarron and Sherwood and Smith, to drive the offense and to like, they're the most consistent line through the entire series in the way that they played. And so I think throwing Parsonen into that for his first playoff game ever and his first game in weeks, that would not be putting him in a position to succeed. So I liked the move. I liked putting Jason Zucker on that line.
I totally agree.
He was to, you know, go back to last episode, he was the ultimate fecal agitator in this series on that line. I think he fit in very well. And he's from California, so still fits the brand identity, and we're all good there. But I think that that was, I needed the rest of the lines to play with the level of consistency that the fourth line did, because they weren't, even if that's not your top goal scoring line, I mean, it's your fourth line, it shouldn't be, but even if they weren't producing points per se, they were producing chances, and they were getting under the other team's skin, and they were doing everything that they should be doing, and they were bringing it every night. Now, and Braden, you and I talked about this, it seemed like in game six, the top line for the Predators last night did look really good when it came to generating chances. Every time that line was on the ice, they were in the offensive zone. They got the puck down in the zone, which we hadn't always seen earlier in the series. So that
they were good. Yeah,
that was good. But, you know, and this isn't new in the playoffs. We've seen this from this team all year, that they can generate chances, but they can't finish. And so that, to me, that and the, you know, not being able to capitalize on opportunities, to me, was why before the series even started, I said, I don't think the Preds can win it.
So James says a couple things here in the comments that I want to point out, but then kind of probably quickly move on here. Feels like the exact same ending with new management team, terrible power play, absent offense, and getting beat by a third string goaltender. James then follows that up with, this is why some of us are begging for a true rebuild. Why is this franchise okay with mediocre hockey? So let me.
Sounds like big picture.
It is very big picture. And I actually think that last one is wrong. You cannot remove the longest tenured, winningest general manager and only general manager in franchise history, fire the coach, trade off all the pieces, get rid of your $16 million worth of centermen, trade Ekholm, trade Granlund, trade Niederreiter, and not call it a rebuild. Like, I think it's clearly a rebuild. They just are ahead of schedule, which is a good thing from an experience standpoint, bad thing from a draft pick standpoint. I'd rather have the experience. I would much rather have the fun hockey and the three home games, even if they were all losses, a thing that I can take my kid to, a thing that fans can enjoy, things that, like, playoff hockey is fun. It's great, even if it's absolutely heartbreaking and soul crushing the way it was at Bridgestone Arena. I think that is a rebuild. They're just sort of ahead of schedule. The question is, and this is also big picture, so I'm not going to say it for too long here, but the best two lines on this team are the two lines you just mentioned. They played the best hockey the most consistently through the entire six games and through the regular season. How easily is that replicated next year with an aging top line and a bottom line that scouts are going to see now? I don't know, but that's a big picture topic. Here's the other thing.
I'll also point out there too, like, nothing about this series was mediocre hockey. This was high level defensive goaltending, chess match between the two front runners for the Jack Adams Award. And you got to remember too, Vancouver had 109 points. They won 50 games. We're talking about one of the truly elite top teams in the NHL, and the Predators could have won this series. They beat themselves more than I would think Vancouver beat them, but nothing about that was mediocre. And there's nothing, like, I think we're having these visceral overreactions because, yeah, the last couple of years of the David Poile era, like, I get it. The feeling is the same, but no, in no sense is this the exact same thing where management doesn't care. Oh, they don't want to win. They don't have the players. Like, there's clearly a direction this team is taking, And I think the biggest takeaway for me is after the series last night, Predators fans should feel confident that they have the right head coach and they have the right general manager.
A million percent agree with that. Look, we're big in BC here, boys and girls. All respect to Nashville and their fans. They put up a hell of a fight, and their fans were every bit as loud. Calder Kid says no one had these two teams even making the playoffs. I agree. Let's see here. Connor says, I personally think both teams have overachieved, which is great, positive sign for both teams moving forward. Michael, I agree. I think it was a very well-played series, very entertaining. And I think both coaches completely worthy of being two of the three finalists for the Jack Adams Award. And to your, you know, you kind of rattled off all the numbers there for the Predators stars, which again, Josi, one goal, two assists. O'Reilly, one goal, game one, one assist the rest of the way. Gus Nyquist, one goal, three assists. But I thought they played very well. Forsberg ended up with 2 goals and 4 points. But Pedersen had 3 assists and no goals. Hughes had 5 assists and no goals. Besser had 4 goals, of course, 3 very important ones, and a couple of dimes. But JT Miller had 1 goal. I think both teams did a good job of sort of not taking away the stars, but just sort of keep none of them exploded and dominated. And honestly, what I outside of the 0-for-3 at home, third string goalie power play, we kind of mentioned all that stuff. I think you could also point to the fact that Besser and Hughes came up big in two huge moments to win Vancouver games. Hughes made the play in the third period of game one. The rock star Norris Trophy defenseman, maybe the best on the planet, not named Roman Josi, made the play in game one to win the game, made the big play. And Besser, of course, did what he did in game four. And that's the difference. Their stars made the big play in the key moment. And that's what you have to have if you're going to advance in the playoffs. And the Predators kind of had opportunities, and they couldn't finish it in game six, and they couldn't finish it in game four, couldn't finish it in game one. You got to finish at some point.
I think to Emma's earlier point too, Forsberg technically had a point per game, but he wasn't really that big of a factor. You take away Nyquist and you take away Josi and their scoring ability. Nashville did the same thing, but to Emma's point, the depth won. When Besser got his, but when you hold JT Miller to just one goal and Quinn Hughes has 0 goals, Vancouver had Dakota Joshua, Elias Lindholm, Zadorov, Connor Garland, Pia Suter with 2 big goals. The depth of Vancouver, that just shows how important depth is. When you take away the big stars, Vancouver had guys that were able to step up and score those big goals when they needed. Yep. Nashville didn't.
I agree.
As an aside, point out, because I thought this was a great storyline in this series, the fact that Pia Suter had taken the puck to the mouth in practice earlier, during the series, and his mouth was all stitched up, and he had been eating, he had just graduated to mashed potatoes a couple days ago. He was eating out of a straw, and that guy comes out and gets your game winning goal in game six. I mean, playoff hockey, man. It's great. I love it.
And by the way, that play, there's a little bit of luck involved in that play to throw it around, to wrap it around and hit the blade perfect. I mean, again, sometimes you just have to make the play, and
there has to be luck in a series that was as close play. Series as close as this one, there has to be some luck there. And again, I think, going back to what we were saying earlier, what Mike was saying earlier about these just visceral overreactions about, it's the same, same shit, different year. It's the same thing. Yeah, that I think,
James, that's the same thing we've said for years, guys. Same excuse, same story. Love you guys, but it's depressing.
You'll get over that. I'm sorry. Yeah. Also,
you can be depressed, but just let it go.
It's just hockey, you guys.
No. Hang on. That's not fair. We're doing this because we all love hockey. What I think is that it's okay for you as a fan to pick when you want to go to the big picture. If you want to take a couple of weeks and stew in this, you are absolutely fair and right to do it and be like, motherfucker, 2-for-22 on the goddamn power play. We go 0-for-3 at home against a third string goaltender. Be pissed off. That is totally okay. But they got here in a very different way than they did in any other time. And that's going to be the big picture stuff we talk about coming up. So,
yeah, I think that, looking at that, definitely be upset. I mean, if you're a Predators fan and if you just look at all the missed opportunities in game six, let alone the entire series, yes, that's certainly worth being upset about. But the whole it's the same story again.
Totally.
Again, I just encourage people to remember all the big sell-off they did at the trade deadline last year. They have a new GM. They have a new head coach, a brand new system. I just think that there's so... Okay, shush.
big picture on me.
This isn't too big picture. This is staying within the season. And again, we talked about this earlier, that this is, remember, this team wasn't even supposed to be here. Like, we and everyone, it seemed like the whole fan base at the beginning of the year, you know, Barry Trotz comes in and they're like, oh yeah, you know, he says, we need you to be patient. And everyone's saying like, oh yeah, that's great. Like, we've got the right guy here. And this is, you know, we're going to be patient. We're going to bring it. And then they don't turn the whole damn franchise around in 1 year. And you guys are like calling for his head.
I think they kind of did, honestly. But again, we'll get to that in the off season when we have time.
When I say turn the franchise around, I mean, like, they don't make it to the cup final in the first year. Like,
right.
Come on.
Yeah. So I think ultimately this is sort of more like in the short term, looking at the series, I think Andrew Burnett was excellent. Now, he was loyal, maybe to a fault, as Anthony points out, definitely love Bruno. Good caveat there, but have concerns about his decision-making in the series. No lineup changes unrelated to injury, except for Parson and question mark. Still don't understand the decision to keep Novak in the series. I think we can nitpick Andrew Burnett around the edges, but he put his team in a position to succeed. They had the lead in the third period in game one on the road. They won game two. They had the lead in the third period late with 6 seconds to go in game four. They were tied in game six with 2 minutes to go with lots of scoring opportunities. I agree you can nitpick Andrew Burnett, but I honestly don't think of the list of things that I'm blaming for the series loss. Andrew Burnett, I don't know. I don't even know if he's in the top five. And I respect you, Anthony, and what you're saying, but maybe Rick Tocchet was in fact better, but I think his team was in fact better. I just think they were in a position to succeed almost every game outside of game three, which was, you know, two power play goals early and you're down and then your just offense sucked the rest of the way. I mean, outside of, like, I don't know. I think he put his team in a position to win at least three of the four games they lost. And that's kind of all you can ask from a coach. So I don't know. Do you guys give me a quick evaluation of Burnett's decision making throughout the course of the series?
Yeah, I mean, I think he did a great job. I probably would have taken Novak out a game or two and tried Parson in at least, just because there wasn't a problem with any of the other lines. That Novak, Evangelista, Jankowski line, they were noticeable because they weren't really doing anything. And sure, the other lines weren't scoring either, but they were also like they hit their assignments. They were doing what they were supposed to defensively. Tommy Novak was getting pushed around, and in a series against a team like Vancouver, where they all have 6'5", 6'6" defensemen and stuff, you have 5'10" Tommy Novak going up against those guys and just getting bullied. Like, I probably would have tried Parson just because he is 6'3", 212 pounds. Like, he can handle that kind of abuse a little bit better. And what the Predators could have used last night on that 4-minute power play, honestly, was probably Tyson Barry. I'm not saying they would have scored or he would have scored, but I'm just saying, you put in,
38 minutes in is our first mention. That's a failure by us and by Emma.
Yeah. I'm picking up the torch because Emma was kind of silent today, but tight. you win game five with Luke Shen on the bench. Granted, he was sick, but you win game five with Luke Shen out of the lineup and Tyson Barry in, and then you go in and your season is on the line and you go away from what worked the previous game. I don't understand it. You need offense. I wrote this on Nashville Hockey Now. Emma's been saying this for weeks. Like, you need offense. You need to fix your god awful power play. And you take one of the best power play defensemen of his generation and you don't use him. I don't understand. I know Luke Shen played a solid game last night. He had some hits. Like, he made a couple really good, honestly, really good plays in the defensive zone. But when you're going up against a team like Vancouver and you need more offense, and you have a guy like Tyson Barry who's a 40-50 point defenseman, and he's not in your lineup, and he's a great power play specialist, and he's not in your lineup, I don't understand it. But those two things aside, I would still give, if we're grading, I would still give Brunette an A for the series, because Nashville could have easily won the series. There's three games that they lost that they could have won. Like, I think he was right there with Tocchet, and I still think he was out coached, but it wasn't by a huge margin.
Yeah, I think it was this series, at least as a, you know, a media member, I really appreciated the opportunity to get to cover this series just purely for the opportunity to listen to both coaches talk before and after every game. I mean, these are two highly just cerebral coaches that you can just tell they're different. They see the game differently and they are really in touch with their players. And, you know, it was just, honestly, it was really nice to be able to hear the different perspectives from both coaches. I think that they're both, like, like we've said, absolutely deserve to be finalists for the Jack Adams. I do think Tockett wins it. I don't see how he doesn't, but you know, I think that it's, I still wouldn't blame coaching as like a number one or even top five reason. I agree. We know I agree about Tyson Berry. I will say it's very out of character for me. I will say last night, game six, probably Luke Shen's best game of the series. Yeah, individually speaking. However, that doesn't mean that, you know, if there is a way that you get Tyson Berry in there too, you need, again, that 4-minute power play that, again, I keep harping on this, but like, why the hell is Tyson Berry sitting in your fucking locker room when he could be out there actually helping drive offense?
I think real, like on the coaching thing, I think it's sort of like the good 0-0 hockey game. You can have a bad 0-0 hockey game. You can be out-coached and be really, really bad. You can be out-coached because the other guy's also really good at his job, right? Like, it's not a knock on Andrew Brunette that they didn't, like, that maybe Rick Tockett had a slightly better series. And honestly, I don't know if he did, because I think Andrew Brunette closed the gap, that the talent gap indicates that Vancouver is a significantly better team that should win the series, and they did. And I think, honestly, the Predators had a better chance to win more games than I expected. And so I think Brunette put the players in the right position. What's interesting about Parsonen, and I know he was kind of forced into the lineup, I'm curious. It definitely felt like he needed some time to get used to the intensity of the game. Like they had one really good shift early, and then like he disappeared for like two periods. He was far better in the third period, I thought. And I think some of that is just a player playing in his first playoff game, needing to kind of get up to the levels of intensity that playoff hockey, especially in an elimination game. So I don't know if I love the idea of taking Novak out in the last game. Now, I know Parsonen was in for Cole Smith from a necessity standpoint, but if you're going to take Novak out, I think you have to do it earlier in the series. I think you have to do it in games three or four so that Parsonen is up to speed by the time you get to these critical moments in games five and six. So, because he clearly took some getting used to the, hey, oh, this is what playoff hockey's all about. And I thought he was better in the third period than the other two. But
I mean, I agree, but also like, when I was advocating for him to be in the lineup, I was advocating for a one-for-one switch. I wanted him to be the center of that line, because when he played in the regular season, he played a lot of his time with Luke Evangelista, and they played really well together. I think if there was a time to do it, it would have been game five. But Novak was in the game in the lineup for game five, and they ended up winning. So, I mean, who's to say that was or wasn't the right decision? But again, we're nitpicking here. Andrew Brunette coaches ass off. And I think this series showed what great, maybe even in a year or two, elite coaching can do for a team, because the Predators were severely outgunned. Vancouver had the edge in pretty much every area, and Nashville was right there with them. And like we said, like, there wasn't a point in any point in the series where one team was comfortably ahead of the other. It was always a one score game. And I think that is largely because Andrew Brunette is one hell of a coach.
No one wants to look at moral victories here. I understand that, but I think that you have to, in a sense, when it comes to what this franchise has been through in the last two seasons, you have to feel confident that you have the right guy leading your team. And I think Andrew Brunette absolutely is the right guy. Yep. And what he's done in such a short time, like, I mean, I think that is a moral victory. Again, I will dispense with the rainbows and sunshine very quickly, because I don't like this, but no. I think he's the right guy. And to go back really quickly, when you were talking about the Evangelista line and how like they didn't do anything and they were, you know, they were visible because they weren't doing anything, I would maybe massage the language on that a little bit. I think Luke Evangelista looked fantastic in this series. I think once he gets it together, like, look out, because he has got all the right pieces. He's got everything. He was making plays. He was, you know, he was generating chances. I just think, and this is all to agree with the original point, which is that he was creating all those chances, but he couldn't finish because Tommy Novak was getting ragdolled and couldn't make it to the other end of the ice to help him finish the chances. So
Evangelista was held back by his line, I think.
I agree. And again, they all looked like boys. The first line looked like grown adult men. And that's, some of that is just part of the learning and growth process in the NHL, because they are very young and small, and they could eat some pork chops this offseason and come in a little bit a little bit better off because of it. They're going to have the experience. They're going to know what it takes. They're going to know what the physicality feels like. And maybe they play in a series next year where it's not quite 6'9" defenseman everywhere you look. So
I think that is another silver lining, because we talked about a couple weeks ago, or months, I don't know at this point, but how Barry Trotz viewed getting into the playoffs as a part of the development for Evangelista, Novak, and some of those guys. So yeah, like, the losing sucks. Losing on your home ice sucks. I get it. You could have won that series. That all sucks. But Luke Evangelista and even Tommy Novak and Parson and all these guys, they will be better players for having gone through what they just went through.
100%. So I want to end on the high note there of Brunette being absolutely the right guy for the job, that this is a learning experience. Also, it is totally fine if you're a Predators fan to need to mourn for however long you need to mourn and be pissed off. If it's one day, fine. I'm dead inside, so I move on very quickly. If other people need to move on and take time to be pissed off about it, that's totally acceptable. But here says Curtis, Nashville fans can feel better about themselves if the Canucks beat the Oilers. You're all welcome on the wagon. Climb aboard. We're huge in British Columbia. All right, so I do have one very important question about Bridgestone Arena and the crowd and the fans. But I'm not going to mention it today on the show because you guys are still dealing with the loss of the series. We're going to discuss that at a later date. And we'll be back on Wednesday, of course. Stay tuned on the Twitter account and on the feed. We might just continue this video thing from now on. Who knows? But we're going to see if it works. But we'll be back on our regularly scheduled program schedule, sort of starting on, you know, we'll be out Thursdays again starting next week. Otherwise, have a great weekend. I think fans will have lots of time to take a look at the big picture and where this franchise is going with roster decisions and coaching decisions and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. I think it's a very different story. I think it's okay to be pissed about missed opportunities and failed big moments for this franchise in this series, and also be excited about the direction of the team big picture. Those two things can be true at the same time. Emma, where can people find you?
You can find me on Twitter at Emma_Lingen and at the Hockey News.
Michael?
I'm on Twitter at @MGSports_, and you can read all my work at Nashville Hockey Now.
If you're on the YouTube page, thumbs up. We really do appreciate you guys watching. All the new people, we love you guys. Thanks for coming and hanging out, and all you commenters. You can get us on a podcast feed, too, as well, anywhere you get your podcasts. If you're on Twitter or Facebook, please share. Give us some thumbs up. And, you know, if you want to write a review, that's great, too. And if you give us 4 stars, you are a hater. For Michael and Emma, I am Braden. Thank you for listening. Have a great weekend. We'll talk to you guys next week.